Yo, what's up, everybody, and welcome to Lunchtime. I'm Ryan Fries. Today, I want to talk about a few things that's going on and share some things with you. Hope you're having a great day, taking a break there at work or whatever you got going on. So, I treat this lunchtime or this lunch hour as a way to just talk about things that are going on a regular basis. Whatever it seems to be, tickling my fancy for the day or things that I'm going through. Friends of mine are going through things like that. And I encourage you to snap back at us here on Anchor, call into the show and see, I want to hear about your day, what you got going on, and see if this is anything I'm about to share with you rings true or resonates with you. So I'm going through a difficult time right now, a lot of different things going on, but namely going through a divorce. It's a really tragic, difficult situation, as it always is. I've got four children, and so of course, concerned about how it's affecting them, what's going to be the impact on them moving forward. Clearly the interaction between everyone in the family has to continue for a very long time. Speaking of all that, things that have persisted, it's interesting. It's seemingly such a lengthy, arduous process. It's been going on for a series of months now, and you think that it would get easier or better, or the strain would go away. And certainly everybody's got their own individual circumstances. I'll spare you a lot of the details because some of which is just too personal to share, certainly in this forum. But ultimately, this wasn't something that I saw coming or wanted to occur. So I want to share some of my own, impressions or experiences with this stuff. If you are currently facing difficulties in your marriage or your relationship, going through some burdens, going through some difficult times, perhaps, some of the stuff I'm going to share would be of some benefit to you. Perhaps not. Balance it on some of the experience that you have if you are divorced, have gone through a divorce or recently divorced. I'm going to give a little backstory. I've been with my wife for 11 plus years. We have three beautiful children together. I have one from a previous relationship that was non-marital. And everything, in my estimation, my view, was going mostly extraordinarily well. Certainly that didn't ring true all the time. Every relationship has its challenges and obstacles and things such as that. Difficulties and whatnot, but by and large, the vast majority of what I experienced was very good. Towards the end, it got a little bit more difficult, but that's customary when you're talking about any relationship that's being severed. The end of it would be the worst part of it. That's why it's happening that way, of course. The vast majority was very good. So I was not expecting or anticipating that to happen, for a divorce to occur. We had three children within a matter of 5 years, which was a kind of a short period of time. They're all relatively close in age. And the addition of children into your household changes everything. The day-to-day activities, what has to be done, why it has to be done, the priorities all change socially and everything else changes. It affects things financially. It affects things as far as what you, expend your time and effort for. Physically, it can be draining as well. And if you are the female, or in my case, my wife that gave birth to these, glorious children, then of course there's also, time between each child that recuperation and that sort of thing. They were all C-sections, as I have very large bulbous babies genetically on my side. And so you have that. And then the infant time and the feeding and the, you know, the sleep schedule and all this type of stuff. In such a short period of time, you know, that just has such, it does in fact change and affect your lifestyle, and it's difficult to adjust to. And if there's any postpartum things that are associated with that, that is also a challenge. And body physically changes as well, and so on. So those things, I think, played a role and impacted how things and interaction in the household began to move in that direction, as opposed to it being, you know, much less responsibility and much less time consumption and you know, things such as that, is the difficulty of being sure that you're taking care of three children in the best possible way. Not the least of which, just the one-on-one adult-oriented style of interaction, and I don't just mean intimacy, just doing things that only adults would do, or going to dinner, or going to movies, and things such as that, or concerts, or whatever it is that you like to do, would also be impacted, because those things are not always compatible with multiple children or young children. So when things began to deteriorate, and we would, you know, have more arguments or more interaction that was not nearly as positive as used to be, I found that increased, and we just got further and further away from what we used to be together, and which was really disheartening. She was, you know, growing unhappy. And my interaction with her was making me unhappy as well, and the things that we were both having to contend with were much more difficult to manage. But from my point of view, I never was in the mindset of ever considering leaving or, you know, changing the dynamic. I always thought that, you know, difficult times come and they go, things pass, and certainly not in a completely reactive way or a passive way. You know, being hands-on and proactive about that stuff is always the best way to approach it, and certainly urges it in that direction better. But, you know, happiness or contentment or unhappiness are, pardon me, are all states of mind that that are temporary, and many times are tied to environment or atmosphere or circumstances. You do your very best to try to remain positive and that sort of thing in any time, but certainly changes in the environment and circumstances and things like that that are outside of your control can certainly have an influence over that. And it did with us, as it does with anyone. And so these changes were taking place and were weighing on us, but I never once considered or thought that it would be something terminal for the relationship. I never considered, you know, hanging it up. I still had faith in us and thought that we'd be able to work it out together and come out the other side stronger. Turns out it didn't work out that way. So I'll share some things with you that I've learned during this six and a half months time frame of this matriculation, how this has occurred. Up until March, I still thought that everything was cohesive and that we were going to be, you know, remaining together and making things work, recognizing that things weren't as great as it used to be, but still thinking we're, you know, moving forward and staying together and focused on that. April rolls around, and I'm told that that she doesn't want to remain. She would like to leave. She decides that she wants to stay until the end of May, and as such, you know, I didn't see this coming at all, and she was starstruck by that. She was completely befuddled that I was unaware that it was that close to the breaking point. From her point of view, she told me that she had, you know, expressed it to me several different times, and in her way thought that it was very clear. And I can tell you from my experience that it wasn't as clear, at least to me. Not that I was, you know, purposefully trying to be obtuse or wasn't trying to listen, didn't want to hear it. It just wasn't either communicated in such a way or I was unable to hear it in a certain way that it rang true to me that it was truly that far gone. From all the stuff that I've read, and there's much material out there if you're at all curious, and I'll try to include some of the links in the show notes, this is not uncommon. 70%+ of divorces are begun or are started by the wife. 80% of the time, the husband is dreadfully unaware that it's that far. Certainly aware that things are not great. Certainly aware that, you know, both parties or at least one party is unhappy. But not to the point of where it appears to be so far gone that it's irretrievable. This seems to be the way that it goes. So when I was told that it had gotten to such a point that she wanted to part ways, I was floored, completely overcome, physically and otherwise. I was just totally overrun by it, because as much as we had discussed, you know, the difficulties that we were going through and how, you know, things needed to improve and what we both thought we needed from the other party to make things better, I just never saw it as being so catastrophic that it was time for it to end, that it was couldn't be salvaged, couldn't be, you know, worked through. And again, that's just not uncommon. So that moment was extraordinary, because when she shared that with me, I was devastated. At that point, and all too late apparently, that point it clicked like a shot in the jaw, like a punch in the stomach, that this is apparently a massive, horrible problem. And that she's not just considering leaving, that she is indeed leaving. So I fell apart, and I have no shame in that whatsoever. And those of you that are listening that have gone through something similar certainly shouldn't feel any shame of it either. It meant something to me, and as such should mean something if it's going to fall apart. And so I just was, you know, snot bubbling all over myself about how incredibly unhappy I was at the news that this is the way that she wanted to, you know, proceed or apparently not proceed. It was super surprising and just a horrible feeling. And so I it was almost like, and I have expressed this before to her, that it was almost like being in a near-death experience. Like, I came away from that discussion with a completely new perspective, completely alien perspective as to what I was accustomed to and the lens that I was looking at life with than I had ever had before. I had clearly become content in the malcontent. I had clearly become a victim of my own habits and ruts, as a lot of people do, and thinking that our day-to-day activities were, while very mundane, acceptable and you know, normal behavior, and that, you know, any day things could go this way or that way. And certainly I had no expectations, and still don't, of an extraordinary life in which it's just like constant 24/7 international travel and doing all kinds of, you know, just, you know, once in a lifetime type situations. You certainly need day to day mundane stuff that's, you know, required of maintaining life. But we were doing that with such a degree of normalcy that it was eating away at things. And, you know, you get caught up in what it takes to maintain a certain style of life and, you know, what we have to do for next week and what's going on with the laundry you know, what time do I have to be in the office? Who am I meeting on Tuesday afternoon and all this type of stuff, which, you know, you can find yourself believing to be extraordinarily important at the time. And as I did, and I believe she did too, with stuff like this, it just became such a blind spot. But then when you're faced with the prospect of losing, in my case, the love of my life, everything pulls into focus very quickly, and you go, none of this shit mattered. None of it. I would gladly have lost or given away any material item that we had ever worked hard to achieve. Home, you know, vehicles, any of that stuff. It doesn't matter, you know. You get so wrapped up in that stuff because, you know, you feel like, well, I'm working for this. I have to build assets. I'm working for the home. I'm working to provide for our children to be in a, you know, nice neighborhood, to go to a good school and to be in a safe area and to be in a home that provides enough space and all this stuff and not want for anything and make sure they have, you know, good nutrition and food and clothing and all these types of things. And certainly to a large degree, that's very important. But you know, again, facing the idea that this was all going to come to an end, and I certainly mean this. This is my dream girl. I mean, I know you don't know my story, but I had as soon as I had seen her, there was a Koi No Yinkin type of experience where I just knew this was the person for me without even having any direct interaction. I could just tell there was this energy about things, and I was immediately just drawn. And I spent, I met her in a work environment, and I spent time to, and found ways to be around her when there was no natural way for me to be around her. She was in the sales side of the house. I was doing a lot of consultation and hands-on stuff with IT, mostly, you know, automation and programmatic stuff. And we just don't generally bump into one another in a natural way. But I took such an interest that I wanted to be around her. So I found myself in the field, and I, you know, at one point in time, she was discouraged that she wasn't making as much money as she anticipated through the sales role. And I, you know, consulted groups like this before on the actual practice of performing sales and that sort of thing. And I said, I'm just going to go unsolicitedly visit her and sit down and make sure she doesn't leave. You know, this is what I would do if I was in your shoes. If you want to make more sales, try some of these techniques and that sort of thing. 30 days later, she was the number one salesperson in the entire organization, 230 employees strong. And things became a lot better, and she stuck around, and I found myself to be around her a lot more frequently, and that was all purposeful. So anyway, long story short on that, I just knew from the very beginning this was somebody that I had to be around. It was one of those things. And as our relationship progressed and we got together and everything, I a good year prior to our marriage, probably even longer, to be honest, a year and a half, maybe two, I found myself laying in bed with her, and I prayed to God and asked him to give me the opportunity to marry this person. So I've spoken to a lot of different people who have been married for periods of time, long, you know, 10 plus years, whatever, children, no children, lengthier relationships than that even. And I don't know, and maybe this is something you guys can call in with, how you view your connection and relationships with your spouses or ex-spouses and that sort of thing. I haven't yet heard anybody express it the same way that I do. That it's such a high spiritual, cosmic, fulfilling connection that it's just something that is so ingrained and so deeply in the sinew of who I am that I can't break a part of it. I just can't. It's really, it's difficult to express, because they say that, you know, the part of the brain that processes love and that sort of thing is just unable to communicate with the other part of the brain that helps you enunciate these types of things. So I try, but any case, I have such a deep personal connection soulful connection with this person. Like I can detect when things are not right, even when we're not even close to being with one another in the same room or even in the same state. It's just bizarre type stuff like that. I know when she's going to call or if something's going down that I need to reach out. It's just like an energy. But any case, so when it came to, you know, facing that this thing was gonna happen, again, pulled everything into focus and nothing else mattered. My home was with her regardless of what the structure was like or where it happened to be or how we transport ourselves here and there or what I do for a living. The purpose behind doing something for a living was for her and for the family. And with that now being, you know, compromised and potentially and ultimately fading away, none of that shit mattered. And I want to talk about this. I know this is a very, you know, I don't want this to be a negative episode. I'm not trying to get you down as you're sitting there eating your chow mein or whatever. The point that I'm trying to bring up is that, you know, there are very long-lasting, fulfilling, soulful relationships that we engage in, and we don't always see the path that it's going to go down, and we hope and anticipate that it's going to be positive, and it's going to be long-lasting, and it's going to have such a great impact on us and vice versa for us to be, you know, impactful for them. But, you know, there are curveballs. There are things that take place that you don't foresee. And it's important to remember, or try to, at least consciously, when you're going about your day and what you're doing, purpose, you know, why? Why are we doing what we're doing? Why is it important? And if it's not, then why do it? And I say that from the perspective of many choices that I'd made, many choices that we'd both make, worked against us for having the healthiest, most valued style relationship that we could for one another. You know, we got too far in the woods and too into our own stuff to remember what we were doing or what we were doing it for, the purpose. You know, I love the things that I do as far as like what I earn revenue from, what my work is. I enjoy it. I am lucky and blessed enough to be able to do things that I enjoy and find ways to get paid from it. But that's also been a mission of mine. Like, you know, I can get revenue doing a whole host of things, as any of us can. But the win for me is if you do need to, you know, raise capital and enjoy an income, you may as well find a way to do what you enjoy and have a passion for and try to monetize that, as opposed to finding a job and just getting paid to perform something that you're not going to enjoy your time and just go through the motions of. So I've been very blessed in that regard. But that is separate from why I do what I do, why I strive for the revenue stream and the income that I try to obtain. What am I using that income for at the end of the day after I perform the job duties or I perform the work and I earn the pay? Well, I mean, I was doing it for the family. I was doing it for her. I was doing it to, you know, provide the, in my mind, the, you know, best livable conditions, comfort, stability I could. And I manifested that in different ways, as we do. So, you know, I talked myself into believing you need a big, huge, nice home and this sort of thing, and which only either served to add additional pressure so that the revenue stream stayed steady or increased, or, you know, we'd have to compromise or do something else like that. I have an affinity and gave way to, you know, number of vehicles that I've purchased over the years, way too many. That only serve to, again, increase the seeming necessity of focusing on the income stream as opposed to what the purpose of providing was for. I'm probably rambling at this point, but the point being is, when I was told that she was leaving, none of that mattered anymore. and it was like, we could have done anything. I would rather live anywhere with her than anything that I've accumulated over these years without her. Which is a very sobering thought, because then it's like, what am I doing? Why am I going to do this tomorrow? Let's work really hard and make this money to do what now? Come home to this place alone? The true value was always to be together. And while I have been a hands-on, engaged, like, you know, the father that I try to be, like, I want to be, and I have been at every, you know, school event or rehearsal or sports practice or game or anything like that over the years. Everybody can do better. No one is perfect. I could always be a better father. I should have found a way to be a better spouse, a better husband, friend, and otherwise. Back to purpose and, you know, fulfilling a why. I should have sacrificed some of the things that I was doing for my provisions, what I was doing to provide, and the financial space, and focused more on how I could have been better soulfully or fulfilled, you know, needs through either time or attention or care more than even I was doing before. I thought I was doing a good job of that, but it didn't appear to be as much as I could have done, for sure. So again, so that's the beginning of the timeline with that stuff. And so I basically woke up out of a stupor of regular day-to-day humdrum habitual lifestyle. Shock to my system as I was being told something that I had never anticipated would ever take place for us. And so from that moment, when I came back into the home, we were outside speaking, and I was, again, I mean, so devastated that it was physical for me. I decided that day forward, I was going to change everything. That was, you know, the most important thing in my life was about to get just disarmed and completely interrupted. And I couldn't stand for that to happen. And I had to switch gears. I need to focus on what's most important instead of what I've talked myself into believing was contributing to what's more the most important. I thought that I was doing what I was supposed to do to contribute to a happy, harmonious household for our family to you know, thrive together, to be happy together, to spend this time together. And I managed that wrongly and didn't realize it at the time. I talked myself into believing that, you know, things were working out when clearly they were not. So I decided right then and there, you know, tomorrow being the first day that I'm going to deal with this, I'm going to change everything. I'm going to reevaluate what's going on, take inventory of what's going on. I'm going to become the very best me that I can in every possible facet that is available to me so that I can, you know, avert this if at all possible, because that was still in my heart at that time, that I wanted to, you know, avoid that outcome. I didn't want that to, you know, happen. I didn't want a divorce. I didn't want to have a separation. I didn't want our family life to be interrupted so abruptly and so, you know, strongly for all of us and the children, of course, too, that I'm going to do whatever it takes. You know, there's a lot of different ways people react to things like this. I don't know if there's any one correct way. I wouldn't say that, because everything is, you know, conditional. But there's a lot of people that, you know, they get upset and they say, well, if she doesn't care for me the way that I am, then she doesn't love me for who I am, and point fingers and, you know, she could have done more too, and it's not just me and all this type of stuff, which I understand that emotionally, like, that's a very, you know, common knee-jerk reaction to things. Perhaps you're even correct in that, you know, maybe you are being taken for granted or underappreciated. I mean, that's very possible. And then there's, you know, just, I don't know, I'm just a different personality type that pointing fingers doesn't erase anything. Talking about how one person could be right or wrong doesn't change the past. So, you know, focusing on who is right or who is wrong kind of got us into that mess, because it's always got to be some kind of victor when you're having some sort of an argument or an impasse. It's like, oh, well, I feel this way and you feel that way, but one of us has to be right and the other one has to be wrong. And that's where you start, you know, bumping heads and getting into, you know, a loop of this type of interaction. And then, you know, time passes and you've got 10 or 12 of these under your belt at this point, and some animosity, acrimony starts building up. And that's where things get off the rails a little bit. And it's just stupid, because at the end of the day, nobody's 100% right. Nobody's 100% wrong. Sometimes even being factually right doesn't make it right for the situation, because there is leeway, there is, you know, emotions and things like that involved that don't always follow a logical path, and you can't always force yourself or shoehorn yourself into that situation. So I said, I'm going to become the best me that I can be. I'm going to, you know, write down and identify various things that I see in myself that need correction or need improvement. I don't like the word change, by the way. Change to me has the connotation that there was something wrong to begin with that needs to be corrected. Or that you were something and now you're something else. I don't think that's entirely accurate. I think that, you know, your core person is still the same. You know, you're either a person that uses good judgment or you're not. You're either a person who's emotionally available or you're not. You're either a person who has empathy and cares for other people or you do not. I find that under certain circumstances, or if there's heightened stress, or if there's, you know, unusual a situation that you're under, you can act in an unusual way. And that can be prolonged if the stress lasts longer than a day. You know, 99% of the time you're going to act this way, the 1% of the time you'll act differently because you're in an extraordinary situation. And it is very difficult to be 100% all the time. You're going to have off days, you're going to have good days, bad days, slow days, you know, tired days, physical days, sick days, whatever, that impede you from being 100% your very best every single day. That's impossible to uphold. And so there's going to be times that you don't do what's expected, and there's going to be times that you're not, you know, 100% your very best. And so, you know, instead of thinking of it as a change, I think of it as improving. There's things that everybody can improve upon. Philosophically, deep down, if you don't believe something to be true or not true or valuable or not valuable, that's going to be something that's very difficult to change. But how you execute things, what you spend your attention and time on, what you prioritize, how you go about doing things can be changed. And if you care enough about something, it doesn't have to be a woman in my case, or a relationship, or salvaging your family, which to me is a very, you know, very important thing to prioritize. But it doesn't have to be that. If you are driven to change, you can change. I don't believe anybody that says that people don't change. People can change. It's not that they don't change. Change can occur, but change is difficult. Change is effort. Change does take time. You have to be willing to change, or in this case, improve. But part of it is you have to identify what needs improvement. Accept it for yourself. Look yourself in the mirror and say, okay, I'm not the best that I could be. And very rarely are you going to be. And just be honest about it. Should I have done this differently? Can I be better about this? Absolutely. That doesn't mean that you're not a good person. It doesn't mean that you're not valuable as is. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're whatever, less than, because you're not perfect at XYZ things. No one is. The difference is a lot of people are afraid to admit it. Most people are afraid of the work. And if there's not some sort of instant gratification at the end of it, a lot of people don't see the reward in it. Now, I caution you against those things, because there is absolutely value and improving on yourself and continuously refining yourself for whatever your ends are, regardless of how much of an uphill battle it appears to be, regardless if somebody's going to pat you on the back when they see it, regardless if you're going to be the greatest tennis player of all time because that's what you want to improve upon immediately or ever. The process and the pursuit of trying to become your very best has its own reward. The discipline and the people that view you on the outside that matter to you the most, people that care about you the most, take notice of that and see it. You can set an example for other people, particularly if you have children, so that they can see that this is something that is doable. There's far too many people out there that complain and are unhappy with what they have going on, whether it's their business pursuits or their personal relationships or otherwise, that just aren't willing to get out of their own way and focus on something that they can improve upon. And it's a very simple process, really. I mean, you can just begin with something very small. You just write down 3 or 4 things that happened today that you don't want to repeat. And then tomorrow, you eliminate one of those things. I'm not going to do that anymore, whatever it happens to be. Very small stuff. It doesn't have to be anything very large. Start small, and every day that you take one thing out of that list, that's one more thing that's off of you, that's behind you, and that's something that you've already now eliminated and have improved upon. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, I don't want to get up late in the morning anymore, if that's your thing. I don't want to, you know, if I have something that I'm supposed to attend, I don't want to run late. I don't want to add stress to myself or appear like I'm not responsible or give any, you know, importance to those that I'm meeting with by showing up late. Okay, that'll be the thing that you focus on tomorrow. If you have any appointments or anything that you have to meet to, going to work, going to someplace else, whatever, focus on improving upon that. I'm going to be 5 minutes early. Do that for a time and then review what else you got going on. You know, maybe I speak too negatively. Maybe, you know, when I speak to people, I say this instead of that. Whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. Find things that you need to improve upon yourself if that's what you're trying to do to meet your goal to be the very best that you can be. So my muse, my motivation to be my very best is my wife, first and foremost. Certainly, of course, I want to be the very best I can be for my kids. That goes without saying. But the immediate trigger, the immediate driver of me trying to be my very best is my wife. She deserves the best. This is my view, even at present time. This is not something that's time capsuled. And I was, through repetition or, you know, just the drollery of everyday activity, receding away from being the very best that I was, receding away from the version of myself that I was when we first began, who is a better version of myself in execution. I'm still, you know, the same heart, the same, you know, guy that's, you know, sympathetic and empathetic and helpful and all that stuff. I mean, that much had not changed, but the execution of it had become strained. You know, I was a bright red sports car and, I didn't take care of it and the paint began to fade and I, you know, didn't clean the mud off the body and all this stuff. And it just didn't perform the same way. It didn't shine the same way. It was still me. It was still my body, but things didn't, you know, just wasn't the same. So, you know, I've isolated a lot of those things. So from day one, I began changing. I began improving. I began focusing on things that I was no longer satisfied with myself. Not because it was something that she directly asked me to do. It's not one of those situations where it's like, hey, you know, you were inadequate because you didn't do this one thing and or you did this instead of that or that sort of thing. I did that on my own. I heard that somebody was so disappointed and unhappy that they didn't want to remain in a relationship that I had so much value for, that meant so much to me, that it was imperative that I take time to look at it for myself. And it was an ugly picture. You're going to, you know, if you do that sort of thing, you're going to see all your nooks and crannies and crevices and boils and, you know, wrinkles and all this sort of thing. It's, you know, very bright fluorescent light if you look at it closely. And you're going to, you know, uncover things that you don't really want to know about yourself because it's painful to think of. some even embarrassing to have to admit. But that's, you know, part of the process. And if you really care, you're really dedicated to delivering on something, that's the only way. It's the only way to grow is to be absolutely honest with yourself and, you know, see it through that lens and identify the things that really, truly need to be improved. Don't make excuses for it. Don't cover it up. Don't say, I did it this way because of this, or it's, you know, a condition that I can't control or what have you. All right. So I'm going to talk about a few things that are, you know, specific that I, you know, adjusted. I had, you know, let myself go, you know, physically. I totally let myself go. I don't even know how it came to be honest. It just kind of happened. Didn't pay very close attention to those things for a long period of time. I sustained an injury, you know, some years ago. I broke my sternum, my xiphoid process, a couple of ribs and that sort of thing, which was dramatic. I mean, that's a big deal. Limited my physical capabilities, but certainly didn't have anything to do with my, you know, penchant for Cheetos and, you know, Nutty Buddies. Didn't increase my saturated fat intake, you know. The combination of not being able to be as active and, you know, being behind a desk a lot, that sort of thing, and, you know, the obvious diet choices. I had reached, you know, 350 pounds. 6'2", but 350 pounds, you know, so I had gotten way, way out of control with that stuff. And I wasn't happy about that. Independently of anything else that was going on, I wasn't happy about that at all. I would think about it on a regular basis. I'd tell myself 3-4 nights a week, you know, tomorrow I'm going to do something about it. Tomorrow I'm going to change. Tomorrow I'm going to start becoming more active. I'm going to do something about my calorie intake, whatever. All those types of things as you're going to sleep. I'm going to stop this. I'm going to stop that. I'm not happy with this. I carried a lot of those things to myself. I carried a lot of things that I was unhappy with that weren't even discussed with me. This isn't even something that was expressed to me from my wife. She never mentioned anything about it. She never expressed that it was a concern or even, you know, important to her, that she'd lost interest in me because of anything like that. It was nothing like that. It was something that I was carrying on my own that changed my own feelings about myself and therefore, of course, probably affected my ability to execute and perform as best as I could for the family, being close to other people and that sort of thing because of how I was feeling about myself. So that was one thing I was going to immediately do something about. Time's up. Screw this. What have I been telling myself I'm going to do this for if I'm not going to actually do it? So I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to go back into, you know, kind of a diet that I had done when I was a younger man and was, you know, not like a huge athlete, but an athletic guy. You know, I'm going to go back into that. I'm going to change, you know, my sugar intake, my carb intake, make that basically little to nothing. I'm going to increase my fat, my protein intake, and I'm going to work my ass off. And from that day forward, I began working out. I was in the gym 2 hours a day, every single day. This was, I don't know, first bit of May, let's say. And it's now, you know, this is the first bit of December. So let's say it's been 7 full months. 7 months, I've lost 125 pounds. Because I'm still doing it. Still doing it every day. Maybe a little bit more. Last time I weighed, it was 125 pounds. That was like last week sometime. I've added probably 25, 28 pounds of muscle in that same period of time. So it's, you know, the weight loss is actually not entirely accurate because I built a lot of it back up through muscle gain. Let's put it this way. I went from a triple extra large shirt to a large, and that's not skin tight. It's probably, I'm not quite a medium, but it's, you know, it's a comfort size. I mean, large jackets that have layers of clothing underneath them, and I still have room. I had a 56 long jacket size, blazer size, 56 long, and now I'm in a 44 regular. 46 inch waist, and now I'm in a 34. So great strides in that area, and I'm still working hard to do that every single day, but that's just one thing. And that did something to address how I was feeling about certain things of my own for myself. I was not happy with where I let myself go, my appearance, how I was fitting into clothing, certainly what it could do for me healthily because I've got children and stuff like that. I'm not a young man anymore. Can't be carrying that much weight around. I was completely, fully aware of that. Just couldn't find the willpower, whatever, to do it. Nothing had shocked my system enough to recognize you know, what actually matters and what the hell are you doing? Until she did. So I said, fuck it, I'm going to start doing that stuff. So that's one aspect of things that I, you know, focused on directly to really try to improve myself. It's also one of the more easily recognizable things, because things you do for yourself mentally, internally, emotionally, those are not things that are easily demonstrable to other people, to outsiders, to onlookers. Now, I wasn't necessarily doing it for that purpose. It was still, you know, self-serving, but certainly, of course, I'm not stupid. I do know that if I lost a lot of weight, it was going to be noticeable by the outside world and, of course, her too. And losing 125 pounds in this period of time and that much size difference and everything is very noticeable and recognizably to be difficult, because it is. It is hard. It's not impossible, but it is hard. And so that kind of serves as a symbol of what I'm doing. You know, I can show you physically what I'm doing for all the other things that I can't show you. That if I'm working at this and changing myself so much physically, certainly I got to be doing things otherwise as well, if that's what my primary focus is in life now, if that's my MO. So in addition to that, outside of, you know, being hands-on and engaged with the kids as I have always been, I've taken that up a notch too. I volunteer at the children's school every Wednesday in the computer lab. I'm there for a few hours every week. I have lunch with them once a week, every week at school, every single week. Attend everything that they ever do, between bingo nights and PTAs and curriculum nights and all that sort of thing. I make time for that stuff. That's important. It's been important. It's always been important. And I attended most of those things, but not all of those things. And I certainly wasn't at the school every single, you know, 2 days a week, every single week, doing what I'm doing with that either. You know, it's rearranging priorities and importance. Those opportunities don't last forever. They're at some point going to be out of school, to which you can't regain that time back. Every opportunity that I have to spend with them, I'm going to spend with them, whatever it happens to be. And when we have time together, because we're, you know, it's not the dynamic that it used to be now that we have, we split time with the kids. We're much more active than we used to be. Certainly we got into a rut when, you know, everybody's in the same home and this is the way life is. And you go, okay, we're going to do this. We'll do some homework, fall into the couch or whatever, watch some, you know, TV, have some dinner or whatever, maybe play a game of some sort or interact that way and then go to bed, right? Because you get out of school at a certain time, you go to bed at a certain time, and you fill the time between with some kind of, like, you know, repeatable thing that we do. Here's the, you know, TV show that we like to watch on Tuesdays and that sort of thing. But it was just not engaging at all. And it's just, so we don't do that stuff anymore. So, you know, if the weather's nice, we're not home. We're out doing something. We're active. We're at the park or a different park or riding bikes or going on a trail or whatever it happens to be. We're doing something else. We're going to go outside and going to do some things together. We're going to build things together. We're going to share things together. We're going to have, you know, interaction that's going to, you know, drive us and increase our bonding, but also engage our minds and have us, like, solve problems together, learn things together. That's not something we were doing with any regularity before. A lot of thought has gone into what has contributed to or arriving at the outcome that we came to. So my interactions with people, I'm much more mindful of. Like I said before, earlier, focusing on what's right instead of who's right is a big thing for me now. Seeking to understand before being understood is a big thing for me now. Being a better listener. Thinking of what drives somebody to say the things that they're saying. What's behind the words that they're saying? Is there a motivation for it? Is there something that they're trying to get at? What's influencing it? Sometimes, many times, things aren't exactly the way that they're delivered. Many times, things aren't topically the way that they're spoken about. you know, this may be because this person has this going on in their life, or is because this is influencing what they're having to do, or they're under a certain amount of strain, or have this thing, the carrot that they're after when it comes to like work related interactions and that sort of thing. It's important for me to be a better understander, you know, of communication, because communication at the end of the day isn't talking. It's the transmission of an idea between two parties. It has to be understood for it to be communicated. One person might think that they've shared something well enough because they spoke about it in the way that they understand, but the other person who they're directing it to or an audience has to comprehend it or it's not communicated. So I try to spend much more time and effort on comprehending what someone is saying or what they're trying to get to, as opposed to just hearing it. There's such a difference. And I thought I was doing the right way all these years with my wife. And many times I was. Many times I wasn't. I thought she meant this when she really meant that. And the communication breakdown drives the majority of these failings. You know, and then after a period of time that you feel like you're expressing yourself in a clear, concise way and the person just doesn't get it, you have to begin concluding a couple of things. Either A, they don't care and it's wanton, or B, they're not, you know, paying enough attention to you to care, or they just can't understand you and therefore they're just not the right complement to who you are and there's not a good fit anymore. But you have to fill the gap as to why it's not working out. You have to, because that's how human behavior works. The human brain works that way. If there's not an answer readily available, you're going to plug it in for them. And so it's like, okay, I've said the same thing probably in three different configurations and five different instances, and they're still not reacting the way that I want them to. It must be because of this reason. And those reasons are never positive. It's not because he's such a great person, he just can't bring himself to do this thing, what would be bad for me. It has to be he either doesn't care, or he's not listening to me, or he's neglectful, or something like that. Because you would think two parties that love one another as much as they say that they do, if you express yourself clearly, concisely to the other person, that they would take that into full consideration and do something about it, or change some behavior, or do something to improve that relationship. If it does not happen, you must conclude that it's not important or understood. And so that's not always the case. Those are fill in the gap type of answers that provide some sort of convenience. And then after a long period of time, if you have multiple occasions of that, or one very important thing that you're trying to express continues to be overlooked or continues to not be corrected, a lot of animosity begins to build up. Why am I so committed to being this type of person for them when it appears that they're not doing the same for me? One of us is doing too much and the other person is not. Then you have this balancing act situation, this credit and debit type situation where you feel like you're pouring more in than the other person is. And ultimately, you feel like this is out of whack and it's not good for you. It's not healthy. And that other person can't be fulfilling enough. And it's at your detriment at this point because you're going above and beyond and not getting your fill. But that's not always the case. Those are assumptions. And while perception is incredibly important, and at that time, reality to you or whomever it is that's perceiving it, it doesn't make it objectively true. If I was to stand in front of a group of students and speak to them and tell them exactly how to build a certain thing, and I'm speaking in very direct English language, but they happen to be German-speaking students, I can't be frustrated that they're not able to do what I just taught them to do. It has to be communicated in a way that they understand it. Comprehension is the only way the transmission takes place. The only way communication is completed, that it's terminated at that point, that it reaches the other party in a way that it's understood. And then I'm not making excuses necessarily, because you would think that if you could hear something in two or three different variations on multiple occasions, that you could connect the dots, but that just doesn't always happen. Sometimes you have to hear it in a certain way. Sometimes it has to be in a certain place. Sometimes it has to be in a certain situation for it to click. In my case, With this, she thought that she had expressed it to me on multiple occasions that she was unhappy and that something needed to change. I saw those instances as being something that was in the heat of the moment, and therefore I didn't know what to pull apart as either being the accurate part of it or what was being part of the argument. Certain personalities say things in jest when they are upset, and I never knew that was the thing that should have been isolated from the argument as being the thing that was absolutely true, because many things that were said in the heat of the argument were not true. Could very well be my fault on that side, because it takes two parties. In either case, when someone does fully understand, when it finally does click, as it did with me, in this case apparently too late, then it's up to that person. Once it's communicated, once it's comprehended, now we're at a fork in the road. I fully understand what needs to be, or what this person is expressing to me. What do I do with that information? It's now the measure of the type of person and the dedication that I do have or I don't have. This is where we part company in some instances. This is where some people are saying, this is what she wants of me. She should care about me because of who I am and blah, 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 and this sort of thing, and start, you know, deflecting and becoming defensive. That wasn't the case with me. The case with me was I was driven to improve. I was driven to make adjustments because it weighed so heavily and was so important to me once it finally did click in my brain that I was going to do something about it. I wasn't going to make excuses. I wasn't going to put up a front. I wasn't going to say, well, there's reasons why I do this and that and the other thing. Doesn't matter. Even if it were true, which I wasn't even going to go down that road to even find a way to make it true, even if it was true, it doesn't change the outcome. And the outcome in this situation is I was about to lose my dream girl, the woman of my dreams, the person that I cared about most in this world, and my family entirely. None of that other pretentious bullshit mattered. None of that other stuff matters at all. Are there certain things that you shouldn't alienate about yourself? Absolutely. But that's not what was discussed. That's not part of this equation. It's not like I need to, all of a sudden change something that is a core belief or something that I just cannot, you know, I would have to, you know, subjugate my integrity to or something like that. It's nothing like that. It's all in execution. It's all in how it's performed. You care, but you're not demonstrating that you care. You say you would, you know, that this matters to you, but the way that you're actually doing these things or carrying on is not in agreement with that. That's something that someone that if you do care can and should very well do something about. So I have been. I've been focusing on that every single day since that first time that I heard that stuff in practice, physicality, emotionally, focusing on how I communicate, focusing on how I interact with people, focusing on more interactivity with the family, prioritization of the family over other things, recognizing what is and what is not important, why I do certain things and how I'm going to do it. Doesn't mean it's going to make anything different for the outcome. It could very well still be too late for her and her measurement of whether or not this is something important. That is not something I can speak directly to. But it doesn't matter, because it doesn't change what the purpose is. I do this because she deserves the best, whether she wants me or not. Whether she thinks I'm the best and valued at that level for her or not, doesn't matter. I want to do it. I want to be the best I can be for her anyway. I want to be the best I can be for my children anyway. I want to be the best I can be for my friends and my extended family anyway. And she's the muse for that. She drove me to want to do that through this situation that I'm going through. So that'll about wrap it up for this lunch hour for today. I, again, apologize for the morose overtone of the conversation today. It's not all about that, but even when things are going dreadfully bad and it's in a direction you don't want it to go in, you have control over what you can do and how you perceive it. You can turn bad things into positive things. You can uphold value in situations, even if it appears there's no value, and you can still drive forward and be the best you can be, even if it appears you're not going to get the gratification that you would be after. Because at the end of the day, driving to be your best at whatever it is that's important to you is its own reward. I'll talk to you tomorrow.